everyone, and welcome to episode 79 of the IA Cast. It's crazy that we're on episode 79. My name is Michael Doeys, and I'm here with a good panel of folks today to talk about a very important topic. So we have Jason Earls.
Hello.
Allison Hartley.
Hello.
Aaliyah Dudley.
Hello.
Scott Van Gorp.
Hello there.
And Chelsea Page.
Hello.
All right, so we talk about this topic from time to time, but we felt like it would be a good topic to dedicate a whole episode to, and that is applying for jobs and career, you know, based discussions. And we have a lot of folks here that have varying jobs and who have helped people apply for jobs in voc rehab and other places. And it's a good topic because it doesn't matter if you're blind or sighted or what, you know, you're what you are. It's good to kind of revisit the skills needed to apply for jobs. And so we've got a good panel, and I want to go around and get everybody's, if you're willing to say, what you do for a living and how you managed to get where you are. And we'll talk about that, you know, the process more as we go along.
I have probably one of the more unusual jobs that folks are going to find out there, in that I am a call center planning specialist, also known as a scheduler, for Wells Fargo, one of the largest financial services firms in the country and the world. How I got here was really kind of an interesting path. Back in 1999, I had started as customer service representative for a couple of different companies, and then due to technology issues or call centers closing, things like that, I eventually moved to Wells Fargo in 2012, worked for one department, found that there were some accessibility issues there, tried a couple of other things that were interesting, but my passion wasn't really being on the phones or working with paperwork. It was getting to be behind the scenes, getting to work with the numbers, moving puzzle pieces around, as the scheduling job tends to be, moving people, making sure they're in the right places at the right time, doing the right activities. I had always been interested in call center planning and scheduling, had attempted to get into this position about four different times with my current employer and also with previous employers. Almost had the job back in 2015, but due to some technology accessibility barriers, we had to pull out of that one. In the spring of last year, 2017, the call center planning specialist position came open using software that I had used previously with Wells Fargo for similar work in a project capacity. I applied for it, got through the interview process, and this time ended up with the job and started last July. So through a combination of doing the job applications that I've done, doing the resumes, mock interviews, interviews, second interviews, getting the job offers, to going through the internal hiring process this last time, filling out the internal application, going through the interview, getting the job offer, accepting. For me, it was all about persevering. And I think that's probably the biggest part of it, is it may take a while to find the perfect match for an individual in a career, but going through the process time and time again sometimes makes you better at it and ultimately gets the results that one is looking for.
Now, Aaliyah, how about you? What is your career experience?
I am a student right now studying computer information systems, and my main job experiences have been both student employment at my first university, working as an accessibility tester, and then working at the stables on campus cleaning horse stalls. Isn't that fun, folks? And then I worked last summer as a summer counselor for the Summer Training and Employment Project here at the Louisiana Center for the Blind, and I taught assistive technology to blind high school students, and that was really amazing and a really wonderful job experience and an opportunity for me to really grow as a person. I'm also currently one of iAccessibility's managers, which allows me to continue to grow my skills while still being in school.
Allison, how about you? What is your background and career experience and all that?
So my background is in vocational rehabilitation. I started out in 2009 as I was finishing up my master's degree in Pittsburgh as a vocational rehabilitation intern at our local office, working primarily with blind and visually impaired consumers. That was back when the application process was on paper, folks. And let me tell you, that was painful, having to have somebody help me, you know, handwrite out the entire application. And I worked in that office for a couple of years, first as an intern, and then I got right into a counseling position, which was great because it got me some really great work experience with a varied consumers with different disabilities right out of grad school, which is not something that folks always get. So that was great. And then I moved to California in 2011. I was out of work for a little bit while I was looking for a job. And what Scott says about perseverance really applies to my own journey as well, because as I was working in Pennsylvania, I was looking for jobs in California, and I got in touch with an individual who worked as a manager in a rehab office near to where my boyfriend at the time was living. And I corresponded with her because she was going to be having some openings in her office. And because of various state budget cuts in California, those positions didn't come to fruition until after I had already moved out to California. So I was basically nurturing that networking relationship for a little over 2 years before she eventually hired me on as a counselor. So never underestimate the positive potential of just being in touch with people in a professional capacity and networking, letting them know, you know, in a non-pushy way that you are definitely still interested in any positions that they still have open, because that's how I got my counseling job. I was in that job for over 4 years. And by then all the application processes had moved to online, which was relatively accessible and straightforward with the technologies that I was using. And now I actually work in our Napa office. I manage the entire Napa office for the agency that I work for. And that has been a very interesting experience and has allowed me to gain a lot of different skills working with people in a whole new capacity, planning the work for the entire office, resolving, you know, any personnel issues that might happen, hiring people. I've had a lot of experience recently with hiring and onboarding new folks. And again, persevering is important because the state hiring process can be a very, very slow process. For example, when I applied for the management position, I applied in January of 2016. We were moving to a whole different online application system. So I actually had to apply twice. And I interviewed in June of 2016, got the offer in July, had to move more than an hour away within about a month's time. And so that's another thing that I would recommend for anyone who's looking for a job. Be really flexible about your ability to move, because your ability to relocate may be the difference between getting a job and not getting a job. And that has been my journey so far. I'm really loving my management position. It's afforded me the opportunity to learn a lot of new skills and to get some money so that hopefully my husband and I will be buying a house soon.
Excellent. So, Jason, what about you? What is your experience in working and careers, and what have you found to be, you know, the best for you in the past?
So my experience is a little bit different than everyone else's up to this point. I attended a work program at my school. It was a class. It was literally called like World of Work. And through that program, I've done a couple different things. I was a proofreader at APH for a while. I wasn't the sole proofreader. The way we did it is we would sort of do half and half, so I would work alongside proofreaders. I was also a beta tester for them, beta testing software on the Braille Plus, as well as the using it with the Refresher Braille 18 and the Bookport Plus. That was really fun, actually. It's really what sparked my interest in beta testing. And now I'm beta testing iOS. I also worked at an adult center called Mariposa Place. I did a couple things there. I took some calls. I also helped a little bit with their arts and crafts program. We had this session where I would play songs and everybody got a lot of enjoyment out of that. They had a piano there, and I was working at that position with a friend of mine. And after that, I took an employment course that the McDowell Center offered. It was called Boot Camp. This was a while after, because I had some family stuff pop up. Once I took that course, I decided to, since I had my resume and cover letter and everything at the end of the course, and had done some mock interviews in the course, I moved to Indianapolis, where I currently reside, and decided to apply at my local Apple store. And I did the application at the end of April, and I didn't hear anything until sometime in May. And I did make it to the hiring event that they had on June 1st. And right now, I am also an iAccessibility manager. I'm also our podcast coordinator, so I'm in charge of heading up our editing team.
Chelsea, how about you? What has been your career experience?
I am currently a teacher bond student. I worked several summers as a counselor for the Buddy program at the Louisiana Center for the Blind, which was a great experience. It allowed me to grow personally, professionally, and not to mention it gave me experience teaching before, you know, while I was still a student in college. I taught assistive technology during those summers. Loved every moment of it. And so through that, it led me into doing some assistive technology instruction work for blind high school students and elementary. I've really taught a lot of different ages technology. And, you know, in the K-12 environment especially. And when I went to Louisiana Tech University for their grad program, that gave me a good, I developed several long-lasting friendships and gained mentors that I otherwise wouldn't have, not to mention the wealth of knowledge and just having that degree in the field. And so now I am actually a teacher of blind students in the school system. I was looking for a job. I was just not employed last summer or the end of last summer. I didn't know really where I was going to be for the school year. And so I applied online and found where I'm at now in Georgia. And like Allison, I had to relocate. Goodness, I didn't even have a month to relocate. I had to do it in I think it was 3 weeks, maybe 2 weeks. Anyway, it was a fast move. So yes, be flexible.
Okay, excellent, guys. So my experience has been very limited, I would say. I've actually only worked for two employers. I've been working about 9 years. I started at the Austin Lighthouse, just, you know, put in my application because I needed a job. You know, money's important. And I got the job and showed them what I could do with computers and became a computer trainer. And I did that along with training out in their warehouse for right under 5 years. And then I went to work at the Chris Cole Rehabilitation Center for 2 years, teaching technology and working with vocational rehab. And I loved that position. It was great to work with students and a great flexible team. And then I took another position back at the Austin Lighthouse and been there for 2 years again. And I really, you know, have loved the positions I've had, but nothing more than what I do for iAccessibility, because it is very much my position as the founder and CEO has been kind of a jack of all trades. I get to do IT, I get to do podcasting, I get to do, you know, some speaking, some writing, some promotions. Owning your own business is the best way to learn everything. But I've had to put in applications at different places I wanted to work, resumes, cover letters, and dress well. You know, whenever I was younger, I did not like to dress up. I really didn't. And I tell people now, the older I get, even on the weekends, I wear slacks. I'm boring. And I've developed a collection of ties. I kind of became a tie guy, so it's interesting what employment and different things will do to you over the years and how you transform as a person. So, all right. So what we want to do on this episode, now that we have our introductions out of the way, is talk about the process of getting a job. What is involved? So I guess the beginning stages is finding that job, not even putting in that application, but finding a job. So to me, there's two methods of finding a job. Two main, very important methods. And that is your job search resources and word of mouth. Wouldn't you say, guys?
I would agree. And I would say that those resources would vary depending on those resources of which you choose to take advantage, whether that would be having Voc Rehab as a resource or doing it on your own. But either way, the resources are going to involve a lot of online searching nowadays for jobs. So getting familiar with job sites like Indeed, like Monster, ZipRecruiter is another really great one because they look for jobs all across all the different job boards. So it's kind of a good hub with which to get familiar. And also specific job sites, like specific state websites if you're looking for state jobs, usajobs.gov if you're looking for federal employment. Those are the online resources that I can think of. And then the people-centered resources would be your rehabilitation counselor, your employment specialist if you have somebody who is working with you on the job search process, helping you to find those job leads and prepare the applications. Those resources are going to vary depending on your state and if you're getting Voc Rehab services.
It's also important to network. And one of the biggest sources that you can have for possible employment is your network of friends and peers and people that you have met, especially if you are currently in school. Connections that you can make now may make your career later. And if someone knows about you, knows about your work ethic, they may be more likely to direct you toward a possible job.
And absolutely.
I think it's also critical that your screen reader skills be up to snuff. As much as the current job search arena is focused at online sites, you need to be able to use not just one screen reader comfortably, but multiple, because one site may work better with one screen reader than the next. And you need to know how to deal with any accessibility challenges that might pop up. Because it's not enough to come across something, throw your hands in the air, and be like, ugh, I just can't do this. You have to kind of take the bull by the horns and deal with it. Whether that's using a reader or using, for example, the JAWS cursor to navigate through portions of the web page, or any other problem-solving strategy, you've got to get in there and overcome the challenges, because not everything is going to be perfect. And if you can overcome the challenges in this basic process, you'll be well set to overcome challenges that come up at work.
So I would actually like to expand on that and say that I feel that you not only need to keep your screen reader knowledge up to date across platforms, but I also feel like you need to keep your assistive device knowledge up to date, whether that's mainstream or whether that's blindness specific. And what I mean by mainstream assistive devices is something like my iPad, in a way, I kind of see as, because when I've filled out applications, I've had instances where I've not been able to read some part of a website in Safari on my Mac, but I have been able to make it work on my iPad. And expanding on browsers, I feel like you may also want to be familiar with multiple browsers, especially if you're using a Mac, because there are things that are going to work better in Google Chrome than they are in Safari for whatever reason. I'm actually also working with an employment specialist. I'm still looking for a job alongside what I do for iAccessibility. And I think for me, I feel like having somebody there to help me make sure that my resume looks okay and can help proofread what I'm writing before I submit it to, you know, a job application has really helped me, especially like sometimes if I'm feeling, because I have days like right now actually where I'm just finding it hard to focus for whatever reason. I feel like being able to just talk to somebody while I go through this process helps. And it's really beneficial to me. And I don't like dressing up either, but I totally will do it if it means that I'm going to hopefully get a job and definitely look good when I'm in a job interview.
Expanding on a couple of things that have been mentioned that have really been beneficial for me. First of all, the online resources are absolutely critical. When I was going from call center to call center and in the various positions that I've had, while I was in between, one of the things that I had to do, of course, was make sure that I got the application submitted, got ready for interviews, and that sort of thing. Along with that, something that rings true, my rehab counselor had said, my employment specialist had said, it really is true. When you're looking for a job, that is your full-time job.
Yep.
Put everything else aside and focus on that and that alone. Otherwise, the success will not come. And that even applies to while you're doing the interviews. If you're going to interview for a job, make sure you've always got one or two other viewers out there just in case something falls through. I've had that happen. You don't want to put all your eggs in one basket. The other piece is networking that Allison had talked about before and Aaliyah has talked about. Even when you're in your first job, if you're looking for a promotion, like I was in my case, knowing the right people that are not only in that position, but working with others who work with them, such as call center management team, HR, and others who I now work with on an almost daily basis. Having those connections would put someone in a much better position so that when that requisition comes up for the job that you're wanting to move into, when you interview for that and ultimately get the job offer, you've already got the connections needed to hit the ground running. You know who to talk to, you know who to work with, and it just makes that transition much, much more smooth.
Right. And as much as we'd like to say in job seeking that it does not matter, this really does. Who you know makes a big difference. If you know people in a field and even in the job that you're looking for, you have a much higher chance of getting that position than somebody else because those people already know you. They know you're a team player, or if you're not, then you won't get the job. But they already know who you are.
That reminds me of a phrase that I heard. I recently attended an employment conference, and one of the keynote speakers says, it's not what you know, it's not who you know, it's who knows you and who likes you. So it's about putting yourself out there and putting your best forward and impressing people as well with your professionalism, with your skills, with your personal work ethic, so that they will consider you for that position that comes up.
Right. Because in honesty, it does matter, you know, how well you get on with people. If you work well and you can be in an employment environment where people want to be around you and know that your work is going to be top notch, then you'll, even if somebody else's work is top notch, they're more likely to pick you because they know you. They know how you work. They know your attributes. And so putting yourself out there, making yourself known, is important. I don't think a lot of us would be where we are today if we didn't make connections before we looked for our employment. Next part of this is, you know, we've talked a little bit about filling out the applications. Do you guys have any tips for those out there who are filling out job applications and, you know, getting your resume ready and, you know, all the paperwork process of applying to a job?
For me, I always try to be concise, especially with a resume and cover letter. The prospective employer doesn't want to read a book. You want to put your best foot forward, and I have always heard no more than a page for either.
That's not necessarily the case anymore, actually, especially for resumes. They want to know what you've done. And while you definitely want to be concise, it can go on to a second page. Like for someone like me who has had a greater variety of experiences, that resume goes on to a second and I think even a third page, because I've done a lot and that all matters to an prospective new employer. So the cover letter, you definitely want to try to keep to just a page, but the resume, not so much anymore.
It's amazing how fast that landscape can change, because I remember It wasn't even that long ago when you were told that your cover letter should only be at most a couple of paragraphs and your resume should not be over a page.
What I recommend is on your resume to make sure that the information is concise, though, to make sure that it stays within the field that you're applying for. You know, it's good to have information about, you know, what I do is I write a master resume that has everything I've done. And after that, I go in and I tailor the resume to look a certain way for each type of job that I apply for.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes.
It may still go to the second page, but it doesn't have activities that aren't related to technology, or if I were to apply for something outside technology, which I never would do, you know, it wouldn't have technology or as much technology-based stuff there, but I would still keep my accomplishments and all that good stuff on my resume, but I would tailor it to most pertinent information. And if it's just trivial stuff, like stuff I did in high school, I may leave that off unless it had something to do with the particular job that I was applying for.
One thing that employers are really looking at, though, are what's called transferable skills. So they're looking, even sometimes in fields that you would think might be unrelated, to skills that you would have learned that can be applied to the job for which you're applying. So just keep that in mind as well.
Well, it's interesting that you bring up the master resume, Michael, because that was one of the things that we did in boot camp, was we developed what they called a personal data sheet. And I have accessed that multiple times when trying to tailor resumes to different positions, because it has dates and it has titles and it has, you know, a little bit of a description as to what my duties were. I did fail to mention when I was performing. So I have things on my personal data sheet where I both performed voluntarily and made a little bit of money. I would also say I would not feel comfortable submitting, you know, a resume or a cover letter without having somebody who can visually see it, proofread it for me, and doubly make sure that my formatting is the way it's supposed to be, because I don't have access to a Braille display and speech can only tell you so much.
Well, as far as that goes, speech can tell you so much, but it is possible to, I know with JAWS, you can get formatting information. What color is certain is text? You can get if it's a heading. You can get if it's centered. You can get all those pieces of information so that you could do those things. It just takes a lot of practice, just knowing what is acceptable, what is not, looking at different templates, see how JAWS reports those and tailor yours to that. But I've seen a lot of job sites now actually have a resume builder wizard that walks you through the steps of entering all the information, and they create a tailored resume. Have y'all seen this? The Work in Texas website has this. I've seen.
I've seen stuff like that. I think Indeed has some resume building features in its app, although last time I tried to use its app, I could double tap on fields, but they wouldn't actually do anything, so I need to look at it again.
Most job search websites have them. A lot of employer websites, their applications will actually have a resume builder where you'll add your different employment experiences, you'll add your different educational institutions. You may even be able to search for the institution where you went to school and put that information in.
I think Apple actually has both. They have the builder. They have the place where you can add your employment history and education experience, but they also have a part of the application where you can actually upload a resume.
I have found that to not work a lot of the time. A lot of the time the algorithm tries to parse out where everything should go if you do it that way. And sometimes it will put things in the wrong spot. So oh, yeah. For me personally, I just take the time to go into my master resume and copy and paste what I want included into that wizard. It's ultimately right. Going to save a lot of time.
Right, but the way they do it, you do both. So you put the experience in, and then you actually upload the resume as it tells you what file formats are supported. And that's actually saved me one time because I had a computer issue happen. I had not backed up properly, and I was actually able to go in to my job profile and retrieve, thankfully, the latest copy of my resume from their website. So that was awesome.
Interesting. So it just uploads it as an attachment. It doesn't try to then import it into the – I've seen it where it tries to import it into the wizard, and that's just as a disaster. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it never goes well that way.
I've had both happen. That was an interesting experience. I had something similar happen to me where I was attaching the resume, but then it also tried to parse the information out into the resume builder, and that just was an absolute disaster. So when I have gone on employment websites and done job applications, especially with my most recent employer, Microsoft Word file was a supported format, so I just did it as an attachment straight in, and the recruiter just pulled the information from my actual resume attachment. If you're able to do it, I find that to be the cleanest way to get the job done. Mm-hmm. And I would totally agree with what you said earlier, Allison, about having both the resume and the cover letter. Even if you don't need it, best to have it. Resumes, if they go over a page, especially based on work experience, it's not a bad thing.
And a cover letter is important because that is your time in front of the employer to sell yourself and to set yourself apart from the possibly sometimes hundreds of other people, depending on the position that you're applying for.
And do you guys believe in giving the cover letter at the application time with your resume or at the interview?
Submit I would say it with the application.
Yeah.
I would agree because that is sometimes a criteria that they use for determining who to interview.
A lot of times they'll do that before they even do a pre-screen.
And if you can't submit it at the application, I personally would have a copy ready to take to the interview with me. Now, that being said, I've actually had a position I was trying to apply for not ask me anywhere for a cover letter, and during the interview process I was all prepared to give mine over, and they said, well, we don't need it. And I was like, mentally I'm like, what? That goes against like everything that I know, but okay.
Yeah, that's rare. So,
that was really interesting. Another thing I thought of, if you end up printing your resume, it's probably a good idea to make sure that you print it on decent paper as opposed to just cheap printer paper. At least that's what I was told.
As far as that goes, I think regular paper is fine. It's sometimes if you put it on very fancy paper, it makes people think you're trying to impress too much. And don't do it on colored paper. Don't do that.
No.
People do that because they think their resume is going to stand out, but it almost kind of sends the wrong message, in my opinion, as somebody that's hired folks before who I've seen people do that, and they've had terrible resumes and terrible everything else.
I read one time where somebody had, this was on a website, and they were talking about like things you should never do, and apparently somebody had submitted a resume that was written in Comic Sans.
Oh, no.
Goodness. Oh.
Yes. But the other thing that I always do when I go to a job interview, I bring a packet. I bring the cover letter, a copy of the resume, and my references. You know, a lot of applications mm-hmm. do not ask for references. I bring a packet, a printed packet of the cover letter, resume, and references. For example, I actually applied for a position recently, and, you know, cover letter was not a option there, but they expect it at time of interview. So that's where I bring them the printed materials as a packet for them to look through.
It makes you look well organized when you come walking into an interview with all of that information, Michael. I'm glad you brought that up. Mm-hmm. That is part of the whole idea of putting your best foot forward and bringing your professionalism into the interview. Having that packet ready is almost essential.
Yep, I had one.
And we'll get to the interview, but does anybody have any final thoughts on the application and resume process before we move on?
I just want to say it's all crazy. And I don't mean that negatively. It's all crazy in that everything changes so quickly.
Yeah.
You know, some methodology that you may have learned like a year ago could be out of date. And, you know, if there's a way to keep on top of it, it's probably not a bad idea.
I would just also remind everybody, if you don't know this already, if you are an IRA explorer, they will help you with employment-related activities, and it doesn't count against your minutes. So if you're having trouble on an application website, they can team viewer in and help you. I imagine they could help you even with proofreading and a cover letter or a resume or a portion of an application to make sure that it looks okay visually.
The last thing I want to say is we're giving you guys advice on this. However, every industry you're going to apply for has different expectations, where the tech industry mm-hmm. is very relaxed. They may want just your portfolio. They may want just online what you've done. That's really a thing. They don't care about the resume. They don't care about the cover letter. They don't care about all this other stuff most of the time. They want to know what you've done. So their expectations of the application process is different from, say, the food industry or warehousing or different places. So know your industry. Know what you're getting into when you put in an application, because believe it or not, that does make a difference. That says to the employer, are they putting in what they think I want to see, or do they know what I want to see? Does that make sense?
It does.
Mm-hmm. To expand on that a little bit, Michael, when you, and Jason kind of brought this up too, I think it was Jason, when you are applying for a specific job with a specific company, know the company, know the history. Not only would you want to tailor the resume to the job that you're applying for based on the specific criteria that are on their job postings, but tailor the resume to fit how does your experience fit with their mission, their vision, what they've done in the past, and what you can bring to the table to move the company forward. If you do that, it's going to make that interview stand out even more.
Well said.
And many websites have about us links, and they will give you some of that information. Like, I was able to find Best Buy's stance, and they were talking about their company culture and all kinds of good information to use and to keep in mind.
We want to take a minute and talk about one of our services as iAccessibility. So we have this program called the Career Club, and it allows you to sign up for $10 a month for the basic plan, $30 for the pro, and it gives you access to a group of individuals who have been employed who can answer questions and point you in the right direction towards success in employment. It works through WhatsApp. We have seminars planned. We have different things going on for subscribers of this program. So $10 a month, and you can get access to folks in many different fields, and it lets you expand on your job search and your employment capabilities and helps you become, you know, better in what you're trying to do, or it helps for networking because we have folks around the different industries. And if we don't know anybody, we'll try to find somebody that, you know, does have information. So it's a great resource. So check out iaccessibility.net and look for a career club. And it's a great resource. We hope you guys sign up for it, and let us know what you think. Once you sign up for it, just ask any questions you have about your resume. If you have any questions about how to find jobs, you can look there. So Career Club from iAccessibility is a new program that we offer, so check it out. Once you've gone through the application process and you've been picked for your job, or you've been picked to for the interview for the job, what techniques do you use? Starting with, how do you prepare? How do you dress? How do you pick your clothes? How do you disclose with the employer before the interview that you're blind or have a disability? Or even if you don't have a disability, do you disclose aspects about yourself before the interview? What do you do?
Okay, so this is oftentimes a very contentious subject among disabled folks. And the reality is that non-disabled prospective employers sometimes have misconceptions that they carry about disabled people. And as a result, people, including myself, choose not to disclose our blindness beyond what's on our resume before going into the interview. I will not restrict my resume based on the fact that the activities may have the word blind in the name, but I will not call the employer or in some other way alert the employer in an obvious fashion that I'm blind. I want them to be able to confront their misconceptions while they're looking at my face. Now, that being said, I prepare for an interview in several ways. I usually will ask someone to run me through some practice questions and kind of help me to relax my nerves. The day of, I will do something that relaxes me so that I'm not as tense. I will go over the information in my head, or if I have it somewhere, about the company and recall the important highlights of that information. I will dress professionally. That means for me as a woman, I'm going to wear a skirt or a dress, and I will wear makeup. I don't normally do that, but because it's an interview, I want to put my best foot forward. I will generally ask someone if I look okay. In a situation that I have IRA, I might have them make sure there aren't any, like, really obvious, for me as a woman, if I've used too much blush, for example. I do not wish to look like a clown. You know, I want to look professional. And, you know, there's something to be said for not overdoing it. You don't want to wear some flamboyantly colored something walking into the interview. You know, you want to look confident, and, you know, you should wear something that you are comfortable in, but that also looks professional and walk with purpose. You know, if you are blind, having the skills to be able to find a seat yourself, to be able to walk in and confidently shake someone's hand, to confidently look for a chair, so that you don't have to be guided. It's all about appearance. You know, you want to appear comfortable in yourself.
I would agree definitely with all of that. I would say that in the matter of disclosure, what I have always done is when I've been called and accepted an interview, what I just ask is there any paperwork that I'm going to need to fill out once I get there? Because sometimes employers will have a writing exercise. Sometimes they will have kind of like a little examination or something that they want you to fill out when you get there. And if they say no, I generally don't disclose. If they say yes, then I feel like I need to disclose, because I will either need to have the paperwork emailed to me or someone to read it on the day of. But I think that disclosure is definitely should be done on a case-by-case basis. There have been some incidences where having a disability has been an advantage working in the disability field, and in which case I talk about it appropriately at the interview, talking about how my personal experience with disability has helped to inform and develop my perspective and my skills in voc rehab. As far as professional dress, I think that's really a matter of what makes you comfortable. Personally, for me, I have the type of skin complexion that actually doesn't really need makeup, so I tend not to wear it. I am more of a professional slacks and either a very nice top or a top and suit jacket kind of woman, so that's how I dress. But it's just a matter of what looks good on you, what flatters your figure, and what is going to be considered professional for that environment. Most of my interviews, and I'm sure yours too, Aaliyah, have been in more office or training environments, so that the types of things that we would wear are more accepted attire. If you are interviewing in a more relaxed environment, then you might want to dress a little bit differently. It is okay to ask, what is accepted attire for this environment? Is it business casual or business? Most places will be able to tell you that. If you ask during the acceptance of the interview process. As for preparing for the interview itself, I'm always prepared to talk about how my skills and experience would lend itself to the job for which I'm applying, how I will be an asset to the company. I'm prepared to speak to the company's mission or culture. I definitely am brushing up on some practice interview questions beforehand. And I'm also brushing up and having an idea of some questions that I want to ask the employer, whether I'm looking for those online or whether I'm thinking of them myself, because that's always a question that you're going to get usually towards the end of the interview. Do you have any questions for us? And as somebody who has done a lot of hiring, I have sometimes based my ultimate decision on whether or not to hire somebody on the types of questions that they did or did not ask me as the hiring manager. So that's super important.
Just briefly, before we move on past this, what kind of questions have you asked in the past, Allison?
So for example, when I was applying for my management job, I asked, what are the priorities that you would have for me as a new person coming into this position within the first 3 months? Or I might ask the potential manager, what is your management style? Or what are the skills that you most prize in an employee coming into this position? Questions like that.
I like those kind of questions, Allison, because it really helps to engage the person who is being interviewed, but also the interviewer. It, you know, it's going to let people know, hey, this person is really, really interested in what we're all about. What's going to make the hiring manager really comfortable with that person? So I like those kinds of questions. For me personally, going back to some of the other points, if I'm going into a place where the dress code is business casual, as a lot of call centers tend to be, I will typically still go in a suit and tie, dress up just a little bit to convey that more professional appearance. So that's typically what I will do if I'm going into an interview pretty much anywhere. It's going to be a suit and tie all the way. My own preparation, mock interviews, absolutely critical. If I'm not going in there after doing a mock interview, I don't feel comfortable. Day of, like Aaliyah, I'll usually find something nice and relaxing before I go into the interview just to make sure that, you know, I'm not jittery or anything like that. Through the interview, you can kind of really tell a lot from, you know, about what people are thinking as they're asking the questions just by what's the mood like in the room. You can kind of get a sense of that. And as I'm doing that and they're asking questions, a lot of times I'll end up having to tailor some of my answers on the fly based on what I think they're thinking. So, I mean, just going into the interview with a preset list of questions is good, but always be ready for the ones that may throw you off a little bit.
And I like those because it gives you, especially if you get to ask questions too, you may end up coming up with some questions just in general conversation that you didn't even think of initially. And it really helps, I think anyway, to develop a dialogue and, you know, talk about it because, you know, people love to talk about what they do, at least a lot of them. I've noticed. I personally think, I mean, I'm not a recruiter, but I personally think that it also does help to have questions because, as others have said, it really does show that you're interested in the position and that you're thinking about how you're going to perform in that position in the long term.
Jason Right. brings up a good point in that the interview is not an interrogation. It's a conversation.
It feels like
you.
One sometimes, though.
It should. Well, it can feel like an interrogation, but it should be a conversation between you and the prospective employer. The more comfortable each is with the other, the better off the interview is going to go.
Whenever I was applying for different jobs, I had two different interviews for different positions that I was looking at before I landed the job that I'm at now. One was a telephone interview, and one was a Skype interview. The telephone interview was pretty, I just made sure I was in a quiet environment. And even though it was actually, both of those were on the same day. So I still dressed professional just to kind of make myself get in that mindset of, okay, this is a job interview. I made sure I was in a quiet environment, and like Scott and Aaliyah both said, I tried to make sure that I was real relaxed, and I did something kind of relaxing that day, and mock interviews and all that stuff, but then I made sure that I was in a quiet environment, and for the Skype interview, I actually made sure that I was in an environment that was, I kind of positioned because it was a webcam interview. So, of course, they still wanted to see you. And so I positioned it to where there was like a solid background behind me. Like, I think it was a wall just behind me. So, and I still had to kind of remain calm through the interview process and all. But it was, and as far as the blindness disclosure goes, I basically disclosed it through the interview because my field is blindness related, and I kind of related the questions back to my personal experience, skill sets, that sort of thing. So it's all about making sure that you're ready for that interview, making sure that your thoughts are well organized. You do those mock questions and that mock interview, and you have a set of questions. Okay, what is the caseload of this position? What are the requirements? That sort of thing.
That's a very interesting perspective. You know, it's not often that you have Skype interviews. So I found that very interesting.
Well, and that goes back to making sure that you have your, as a blind person, you know your assistive technology, and you're able to troubleshoot boom, and like in a matter of seconds, because we actually, before the Skype interview, well, there were some technology glitches, and the guy was like, the interviewer was like, okay, can you accept this ad request? And of course, I was like, okay, thank goodness I did some research on Skype before the interview, because I wouldn't have known how to do that had I have not.
Preparing for the interview is always a little stressful. I think it is for everybody. What I do is I always get clothes ready the day before. I make my packet. I print it out usually. You know, I don't own a printer, so I'll go to a store like Office Depot or somewhere and get it printed. And I go in with a folder with my cover letter, my resume, and my references, and maybe a business card, just so they have my information, you know, easy on hand. And I personally wear slacks and a shirt and tie, and I don't usually do a suit jacket just because I feel like that's almost overdoing it some, but I always try to look professional. I don't have to worry about the hair because, you know, I'm bald. So
I'm assuming you make sure to shave.
Oh, yes. Though. Yes. It's, you don't want to look scraggly. It's very important to look, you know, well-shaven. And just go in there, look professional, have things and, you know, ready to go. But don't, you know, one of the things that nobody talks about, and it's very important. I know as blind people, it's very hard for us to know how body language looks, but people read it. And they can see if you walk in there very stiff, very nervous, very on edge. It shows in your body language, and it's hard to explain how that looks. But it's a thing, and you really need to go into that interview as if you're confident but comfortable. You need to go in there and be yourself. It doesn't matter if the person you're interviewing with is a jerk. It doesn't matter if they're hard to work with. It doesn't matter any of those things. But as long as you're comfortable with yourself, it doesn't matter if, you know, all those things. As long as you're comfortable in yourself and that you're going in that interview because you are trying to prove that you're a team player with that employer and that you're able to work. But if they can't take you for who you are, and they don't want to take you for who you are, then it's probably not going to be a good fit for you to work there anyway. So go in that interview being yourself. Be yourself throughout the interview. Would you guys agree with those statements?
Absolutely. Being genuine is the most important thing that you can do.
Exactly. They don't want to see some robot just going through the motions. They want to see you. They want to see all of it.
Yeah.
What are you all about? They've already got your experience on paper or, you know, whatever form they have it, electronic, whatever. They want to see the real you from the moment you walk in the door. So Michael and Allison are absolutely correct.
I was reading up on some advice while I was preparing for an interview as a wearable devices sales consultant. And I think I actually asked you guys this as well, your opinions, I don't remember. But I actually, when I was, you know, getting dressed and all that stuff, I actually made it a point to wear my Apple Watch during the interview. Now, I made sure it was on Do Not Disturb and all that good stuff, but the reason I did it is so that the interviewer could see that I do have experience with wearable devices and that even though I may be blind, as evidenced by my cane, that doesn't mean that I still would be unable to use and even demonstrate, if necessary, a wearable device.
All right. Do you guys have any final comments before we wrap up today?
I was just going to say, I would rather be actively trying to find a job than not trying to find one at all.
Exactly. You're going to learn everything from every interview you attend, whether you get the job or not. And just the reality of our economy and the job market as it is right now, you're going to hear no more often than you hear yes. But every single interview is an opportunity, not only to potentially get that job, but to learn something about how to potentially do better next time if you don't.
My final thoughts are, I think this has been a great show. I think that we've covered a lot of information, and I hope folks that are job seekers take this information and run with it. And if you're an employer, you know, maybe work with folks, you know, expectations are there as an employer. You know, the expectations are there for job seekers to follow the process and be, you know, team players and know what the employer is looking for. But I think that employers should also be flexible. You know, I've hired folks before, and that's one of the things that you have to realize is not everybody's the same. And so employers and employees have to work together to come to a balance whenever you apply or look for a job. And I hope that this podcast will help bridge that relationship and help folks go out there and be successful. You know, that's what we always tell people, that our goal is to help people become successful and making that success accessible to you. So go out there, get get the employment you want, you know, start a business, become an employer, follow your dreams. And I mean that, you know, it sounds kind of cliche, but that's what we're all trying to do, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Allison, where can people find all the crazy stuff you're working on and following your dreams?
You can find me literally anywhere podcasts are sold. But to keep up with everything that I am doing, the best way to do that is to follow me on Twitter at Hot4Technology. That's Hot, the number 4, Technology. You can also send me an email at Allison, that's Allison, at iaccessibility.net.
Scott, where can people find you online?
People can find me online by sending an email to Scott, S-C-O-T-T, at iaccessibility.net. You can also find me on Twitter, at Scott Van Gorp. That's S-C-O-T-T-V-A-N-G-O-R-P. And I'm also on Facebook. Just search for Scott Heidi Van Gorp.
Jason, where can people find you online?
People can find me producing content for iAccessibility. You can email me at jason at iaccessibility.net. You can follow me on Twitter at JDE91. You can also search for me on Facebook. Just search for Jason Earls.
Chelsea, where can people find you online?
You can find me online by emailing me at Chelsea, that's C-H-E-L-S-E-A, at iaccessibility.net. Or you can find me on Twitter at ChelseaP08. Or you can find me on Facebook. Just search for Chelsea Page.
And Aaliyah, where can people find you?
People can find me producing content for iAccessibility. You can email me at Aaliyah, that's A-L-E-E-H-A, at iAccessibility.net. Or you can follow me on Twitter at BlindCowGirl199.
And you could find me online producing content for iAccessibility. You could find me on Twitter at Mike Doise, that's M-I-K-E-D-O-I-S-E. I am on Facebook, just search for Michael Doise. You can email me at mikedoise@iaccessibility.net. And you could find my personal website at michaeldoise.com. All right, if you'd like to find iAccessibility, you can at iaccessibility.net. We are iAccessibility1 on Twitter. You can find us on Facebook. Just search for iAccessibility. We have our nice iAccessibility app, which is in the middle of being updated, so keep on the lookout for that. Really exciting stuff. And we also have a Tumblr blog, we have a YouTube, we have all kinds of ways to check us out. So please do that. And we also have a Patreon page. So we ask folks to support us by going to patreon.com/IACast and just search for iAccessibility or IACast in the app if you have accessibility issues on the website. We have one patron now, so we're hoping for two. So please support us and keep good content coming to you out there in podcast land. So we really appreciate everything and the feedback. If you want to send us feedback, you can use our hashtag IACast on Twitter. We also have our email at feedback@iaccessibility.net. So please send us any feedback you like about our shows, what you don't like, what you want us to cover, and we will respond to you guys as quickly as we can. We hope you guys like this episode of the show. We'll be back next week with an all-new episode about Braille, so that'll be exciting. Good discussion, so that'll be a thing next week, so hope you all join us again. Thank you, everybody that's on the stream, and we'll be back next week. Bye, everyone.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Copyright 2018, iAccessibility, and Michael Doise.